This is the House State Affairs Committee, Monday, February 25th, 1991, starting right on time at 8:46.
You're on teleconference. Thank you.
This is the House State Affairs Committee. It's Monday, February 25th, 1991, and it is 8:47. We have present this morning Representatives Kabina, Moyer, Choquette, and Grunberg. We do have a quorum. Today we'll be taking up further consideration of House Bill 4 relating to the Legislative Ethics Act and further consideration of House Bill 129 relating to Public Officers Compensation Commission. I assume if anyone would like to speak this morning, their name is on the register over there and they have so indicated. We are in teleconference. I'd like to take up at this time House Bill 129. House Bill 129 establishing the Public Officers Compensation Committee relating to compensation of the Governor, Lieutenant Governor, members of the legislature, heads of the principal departments of the executive branch, Supreme Court judges of the Court of Appeals, judges of the Superior Court, district judges, providing for effective date, was sponsored by rules at the request of the Alaska Supreme Court. You have in your packets a draft CS. I think would that be appropriate to move to take up the draft CS for discussion purposes?
I'll make that motion.
There's a motion to consider the draft CS for 129 State Affairs. Without objections, Representative Grunberg.
Yes. I assume that that motion is just before us. We're not approving that motion or not at this point. You're going to go over the bill and the draft CS. Is that right?
Is that the way to do it? That's what we'll be doing.
So we know what we're voting on.
So we're not actually voting to adopt this.
I would like to know what it is.
Okay. I'll give you a brief overview, a little bit of how we changed the bill, and then I'll ask Mr. Christensen from the court system, who tried to fly in but is in Anchorage, an opportunity to talk. I assume he has got a copy of this fax to him. From the original bill, we dropped heads of the department out of the title and dropped them in reference in the bill completely. On page 2, and I think this is something still really need to talk about. We dropped the old Section 7, which is additional allowances.
What page?
Page 2 on the original bill. And I think we need to talk a little bit more that this is still covered. But what it would do, it would leave the office allowance in the ethics bill and set it at a certain rate and leave that out of the purview. In other words, the thought was that was not really a compensation, that is purely a way of handling the cost of our office, and that it really shouldn't be in a compensation.
Mr. Chairman. Yes, do we still recognize that these are allowable expenditures? I'm concerned that they could very well still be a part of this bill. Does this bill reflect a decrease in activity for the Legislative Council?
Talking about salaries and per diem. We've taken out the old Section 7, which had the additional allowances of an office allowance. That is, in other words, is still in existing law, just like it is. So in other words, the status quo is still there.
But this commission will be able to authorize these additional allowances then?
No, it's not their purview.
Chairman, Representative Choquette, I think under the original bill, the authority was transferred from Legislative Council to the Commission. That provision no longer appears in the CES. So therefore, unless it's changed in another bill like House Bill 4, the present law would remain in effect. The present statute would not be repealed. See, right now in AS 2410-110, it provides, presumably the legislature says, its own additional allowance, and that, or either that or Ledge Council. Ledge Council, in fact, has it. And I think that is Ledge Council. So there would be no change in that.
Actually, there may be some debate there that I believe it actually may be set by law, and the way that the Ledge Council was going to increase that was just to pass a motion to have a supplement to that or post it or something.
Well, let's look at that.
I think.
Well, Mr. Chairman, do you have particular problem with this being in the bill, the additional allowances? Is that why we've taken it out? Or is it, as far as you're concerned, repetitious?
Well, the question was whether the allowance is a compensation or whether allowance is something administratively you're just doing to determine what it costs to run your office. And I guess that's really the debate. Want a commission, if you want to take it completely out of legislators' hands, what it costs you to run your office, pay for your postage and whatnot, then you can put it in here. And that's why it was in here originally. If you feel that that account, that money that you get is not compensation, is administratively just there to run your office, why it probably shouldn't be in there. It's somewhat philosophical.
My concern, Mr. Chairman, is simply that the current allocation of $4,000 can be rapidly used up for postage, increase of postage, the increase of the cost of office activities, and I wanted to just assure that this would be recognized and dealt with. My concern.
The HB4 does provide an increase. Depending on the size of the district.
But we're assuming that HB4 is going to pass.
Just like we're assuming that this one's going to pass.
Okay.
Representative Moyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Another way to look at it, I suppose, is currently our allowance can be looked at, in my opinion, as compensation if you take the money, the $4,000 check, minus the deductions. But in my opinion, if you keep it in-house, as some of us have chosen to do, and legislators treat it as if on a reimbursement basis, and clearly to me that's not compensation.
Right.
And that's the way I'd like to look at it. And our current law, if we leave it, doesn't address, we have a policy that allows us to choose. And I think perhaps we should look at clarifying by statute or some other more higher level than a policy, whether it's compensation or whether it's reimbursement.
And HB4 does that also. It takes it out of the compensation realm because it is only a reimbursement. Representative Grunberg.
Mr. Chairman, AS 2410-110 presently reads, in addition to that's in addition to the present salary. Each member of the legislature is entitled to an annual allowance, and then it adds the phrase, prescribed in accordance with AS 39.23, which, by the way, has been repealed, so that's meaningless, for postage, stationery, stenographic services, and other expenses.
It doesn't set any amount.
It doesn't say who, it doesn't mention much gas.
Mm.
All right, well, let's keep that part in mind. And
we'll make a copy of that.
Firstly, I guess I'm not real strong either way, but that was the debate. Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's seems to me that with respect to that one section, there are a couple of issues. Number one, should it be left alone, or if not, which bill should it be in? And secondly, who should set it? Whether it should be set by two choices, being legislative council or this commission. And a third issue is how much? And corollary issue is, should it be in statute or should it be by regulation or something?
Well, do you have an opinion on those questions?
Well,
I think that's where we're at. We're at a point where, do we want it here or do we want it in House Bill 4? Do we want control of that or do we want this commission to have control of that?
Well, yeah, Mr. Chairman, my thought is at this time, before forming an opinion, I would like to hear the testimony and arguments, and then I'll form an opinion. My mind is open at this point, and I don't know. I'd like to hear what people have to say. We've just taken the bill up.
Anything else on that? All right, so we have a question on that. On page 3, if you recall, we talked about the composition of the commission itself, and we changed of the wording a little bit on who was in there on lines 11, 12, and 13, which now we have one business executive, one person experienced in public administration, a nonpartisan voter, a representative from labor, and a lawyer. Rips and Gruber.
I'm going to be raising some issues as I see them, not that I necessarily have opinions, but there are things that we need to decide. Okay. An issue that has come up in the Judiciary Committee with respect to an appointment on the Public Utilities Commission is the issue of designated seats. And this is an ambiguously drafted sentence because it's not clear from this whether as long as somebody has these qualifications on the commission, there should be separate appointments to it. One person who's appointed as a lawyer, one person who's appointed as a business executive, etc. Or whether you could have somebody who even has two or three of these qualifications. Or whether, as in the case of the Public Utilities Commission, if person X and person Y both have qualification, let's say on this thing, as a lawyer, and one of them drops off, even though the other lawyer was appointed as a business executive or something else, whether that person would have made the statutory requirements or whether you would have what we call designated seats. And I'm not sure what the answer to the question is. I suspect these would not necessarily be considered designated seats, so that you could, as long as somebody had the qualifications, that would meet the statutory requirements. On the other hand, if the commission, if the committee here in the legislature wants these people to be designated seats and you would be appointed as a representative of a nonpartisan voters organization, that would be the seat for that forever, that would make quite a difference. And I think that's an issue that needs to be decided. Do we want to specifically designate the seats? Otherwise, you're going to have a lawsuit down the line sometime, maybe. Mr. Chairman.
Representative Chopcat.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gruber, would it be applicable, Max, to list who would do the appointing? For example, a business association or a member shall be appointed by such a group instead of...
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I'm not sure constitutionally we can do that. I think that the governor has the authority, unless there's a legislative commission that's appointed, and this is not, I think the only person in the Constitution who can appoint is the governor. We can ask Mr. Christensen this, but I think that if we were although with respect to the Department of the Board of Fish and Game, there's a statute that specifically says that the boards of fish and game shall make nominations. And the question really, in these, and we've had all of these arguments, I wish Representative Miller were here, he heard this, in the Judiciary Committee, it's the executive's position that the statute that says that the Board of Fish and the Board of Game shall make recommendations, that's an unconstitutional infringement on the right of the governor, because he can only select from among those, although the statute in that case says that he doesn't have to select any and can ask him to submit more and more and more.
Talking about commissioners or fellow board members?
I'm talking about the commissioners in that case. But what you're talking about here is something similar, whether you want to say to the Chamber of Commerce that you shall submit three names or something. I think that's probably going to be held unconstitutional, but I don't know.
Jim Moyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Gilbert, perhaps you know the answer to this. Don't some boards and commissions, don't they have the authority to select a final member from among themselves, their own? I think there's some board commission that allows them to choose their last board member.
I don't know. Maybe Mr. Christensen or our legal counsel should answer that. I don't know.
Mr. Christensen, are you online there in Anchorage?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I am.
Would you mind joining us here and maybe participating in this conversation?
Right.
I would like to say Representative Finkelstein has joined us, and David, since this is sort of mixed a little bit with House Bill 4, you might join us also at the table. We are under the CS for 129. Mr. Christensen, have you... have any opinions on the discussion that's just going on about the the way the board is made up?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Chris Christensen, staff counsel for the Alaska Court System. Representative Groberg has the advantage in that he has sat through some meetings that I've not participated in.
I'm not sure that
the Supreme Court had the legislation drafted this way simply because, in its mind, this was the method of appointment that was most clearly constitutional. My understanding has always been that members of an executive commission such as this one could not be appointed by anyone other than the governor.
All right, thank you. Personally, I have no problem with the way it is sitting right now. I think the more latitude we give the governor in this area, the more chance it is that he's going to accept the commission. Representative Bloomberg.
Are there other changes between the CS and the main bill?
We have one other on page 5. We, section 21, line 27, we added that an initial report would be due within the first 10 days of the session next year.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Greenberg.
Just a technical question on line 27, page 5. If the members would look at the handout that we gave out that contains AS 24.10.110, at the editor's note, it says, the second editor's note, AS 39.23 was repealed by Section 37, Chapter 3, SLA 1980. And here they reference something in that. And I'm wondering if there is still such a statute.
Well, I note that 24.10.100 states that in the salary of each member of the legislature is 46,800.
No, that's not my question.
Oh, I know it's
that's not.
Yeah. I assume this has been
repealed.
Oh, yes. No, that is... that statute was repealed. This is from the main volume, and that was repealed and reenacted in the supplement. It's in the supplement. So I'm just taking a look and seeing if there is AS 39.20.
Does that mean that this book that I've got here is not
completely? No, it was updated. I just, this other, I only got that for that one statute, 110, and I checked in the supplement. That was not changed.
These new statutes.
No, they were. Did good, as we would say.
In other words, you've got to check the supplement through there and make sure that's not.
That's right.
That's all I'm saying.
is that Section 241 was not repealed. Wait a second, I don't see any 241. Oh, it's enacted by this act.
By this act.
All right.
Talking about an odd number of years of reporting, and this is just requiring an initial report to the first year.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Grunberg.
Maybe we should have, I don't know how you want to proceed, whether you want to have Mr. Christensen on behalf of the bill sponsor of the Supreme Court go through this thing first, but I do have one question on the CS. Why did the heads of the principal departments drop off?
Actually, that was my suggestion. I felt that that these people were not in the political situation that the court system and legislators were, and the governor was. And that if the governor so wanted the heads of departments to have salary increases, he could so propose to do so. And that... to be quite honest, I have a fear that a commission like this would appointed by the governor, who oftentimes have a lot of seems like business people on it, that would think that $250,000 salaries for heads of departments, because that's what the president of ARCO makes. And when the president of ARCO comes and takes over natural resources, that they should receive that same type of salary in order to attract those type of people. And I believe that that is something that should stay within the realm of elected people to determine it. And I don't know, I just thought, Max, that basically I could see those salaries skyrocketing immensely. We would then have a veto power over it, but I didn't see the political problem of setting salaries with those people as I see with the elected people of the state.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
But that's open for debate now also. That's my suggestion.
There's a veto power in here?
Well, we have 60 days. We have 60 days to disapprove of this.
Well, where does it say that? Maybe we need have somebody walk through this.
Well, we've already done that with the representative when you weren't here, I guess. But you will look at the report of the commission, if I can find it.
It's on line 7, page 4.
Right.
To throw something out, I'm just raising issues here. I had researched and can provide for the committee what the constitutions of every state provide. I was looking at, in fact, we did introduce, Terry Martin and I introduced a potential constitutional amendment last year looked at, was taken from every research on every state constitution, and a number of state constitutions have a provision, have this kind of thing in the constitution, and some of them that do have it disapproved by a majority vote of the legislature. Others have a supermajority, two-thirds, members raised. I'm not suggesting one or the other.
Obviously, this one here would be just a simple majority. In other words, majority rules, and we could overturn the commission's recommendation. Now, there was a question last time in about the legality, the constitutionality of this commission setting. Mr. Christensen, any comments on that?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. With regard to Representative Grunberg's comment on a supermajority, we do have a fairly recent Supreme Court case. I don't have the site. I believe the name is Alive Voluntary, E-State. This case held, in effect, that any time a regulation and this order of the commission, since it is an executive agency, would have roughly the same legal status as a regulation. Anytime something like that were overturned, it had to be done through the lawmaking process by a bill. That means it could not be done by a resolution, even with a supermajority.
Representative Grunberg.
Yes, and if you wanted to do it either by a resolution or by a supermajority, that would take a constitutional amendment. That's a corollary of what Mr. Christensen is saying.
Yes, that's correct.
Chris, do you have any other comments on the CS? Do you have a copy of the CS there?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I got one just before the meeting started. It seems to keep the essential elements of the bill intact, and we certainly appreciate the committee's quick work on it.
Representative Shilkett.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chris, what are your thoughts on deleting the additional allowances portion of the bill? And I'd also like to ask Representative Finkelstein the same question.
Go ahead, Chris.
Through the chair, Representative Shilkett, that particular section of the bill is something that relates only to legislators, and as such, I'm not sure it would really be appropriate for the court to express an opinion on it. My only concern would be that if it is done, that the drafters at Legal Services be certain that it tracks properly throughout the bill, both in terms of the deletion and in terms of the definition of compensation that's contained on the final page. You know that the definition of compensation does refer to allowances.
Note that Representative Finkelstein has left the room temporarily. Representative Grunberg.
Yes, two questions. And these are for Mr. Christensen, Mr. Chairman. They both relate. Do you, Chris, do you happen to have the CS in front of you? You do. Okay. They both relate to page 3, lines 8 through 15, AS 3923201A. First of all, was it the intent of the drafters of this, since this is taken from the original bill, that these be designated seats, or is it sufficient if one person has the qualifications, even if the same person could have qualifications for several members here?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, I'm not sure that this issue was ever particularly considered. The statute that was on the books was simply copied.
Yeah, and I think we have problems down the line with these things. I just sort of flagged that because I know that'll be an issue that at least the Judiciary Committee will look at. Second, and maybe Mr. Chairman, at some point, Mr. Christensen could consider that, or we could deal with the policies of designated seats because I've discussed that already. And secondly, would it be constitutional for these members to be confirmed by the legislature?
No, my understanding of the law is that it would not be. The Salary Commission, which is already on the book, does require the members to be confirmed. In the message which the Department of Law sent to the governor when he was considering whether or not to sign that bill or veto it back in 1986, the Department of Law noted that the confirmation was unconstitutional. They said that because the existing commission had only the powers to make recommendations and no real authority, then it would be all right for the governor to sign it, that constitutional flaw wouldn't be fatal. Since this bill does give the commission real authority, I would have to assume that unless the Department of Law has changed its mind, it might recommend a veto.
Mr. Chairman, I think that the term regulatory and quasi-judicial, which is the requirements for the confirmation process for boards and commissions in Article 3, Section 26, would clearly not be met by an advisory commission. If it's a commission like this, which does have regulatory authority, the question is, and we've examined this again in judiciary, with respect to the permanent fund board, because the permanent fund board has the power to adopt regulations. This one would, but they'd be subject to disapproval, so it's not quite. But the feeling was that since those regulations in the permanent fund board were only internal accounting regulations and not regulations of general applicability, that it probably didn't meet the requirement of, quote, regulatory. I don't see any argument that the Compensation Commission would be, quote, quasi-judicial. It doesn't adjudicate anything. The only question in my mind is whether it would meet the requirements of a regulatory agency. And I'm wondering if Mr. Christensen has any thoughts on that.
Go ahead, Chris.
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, this again is not an area that I'm an expert on. When the Constitution refers to a regulatory body, it may that term may be interpreted as a body which exercises powers that are either administrative or executive in nature. And the powers that this commission would be exercising are not administrative or executive powers. They are legislative powers.
That is an issue. And I guess another issue would be whether, and this is maybe more of a question for the Judiciary Committee, but whether by signing this bill, the executive branch would be held in some manner to having acquiesced in, at least as a matter of comity, if we were to put a confirmation provision in here, they would be in some way maybe stopped or something from arguing the contrary. I don't know.
Representative Finkelstein, would you address for us the issue of the office allowance? We have in the CS removed the office allowance, and with the intention of leaving it then in the in House Bill 4. Talk about it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The reasoning behind it is that this bill is a bill that relates to compensation. It's a public officer's compensation commission. And we've always intended, I think, and in the ethics bill, we've made the office allowance not into compensation, but just into reimbursement for office expenses. Right now, the office allowance is sort of halfway between. It comes to you as personal income, and you choose to spend it on office expenses. If you spend it less than that, it is income. If you spend more than that, then you have to find it somewhere else. The solution of the ethics bill is to raise the levels, to change the amount to fit the size of the district. And when we had the subcommittee meeting of this committee, the feeling was that it isn't compensation, so it shouldn't be something that's recommended by a compensation commission.
Now, Representative Finkelstein, before you were here, we talked a little bit about it. It appears in statute 2410.110 that this allowance is set up, but it really sets no amount of money. Would you agree that at this time the Legislative Council is the appropriate body that sets that?
Mr. Chairman, I'd agree that the status quo is the Legislative Council has the authority to, in the existing situation, to increase an office account, a postage allowance, or anything like that.
And if it is transferred out of this bill into 4, would that still be the situation then, even though you're setting up part at that time? Or would that then be static from here on out?
This would be in the context of the ethics bill. It would be set, but the reality is for the last 20 years it has been set at 4,002. Why it stayed at 4,000 for 20 years, however long it's been, I can't. certainly is a fact. And the new standards, I think, would be 7,500, 9,000, and 13,000, based on the size of the district, which is much closer to the reality of what it costs to send out a newsletter or a mailing.
And it would be reimbursement only?
Reimbursement only.
Any other questions on the committee substitute at this time? And let me just say that my intentions on this bill are not to pass this bill out today, to hold this bill until Friday, and to allow everybody to digest it and try to have a wrap-up on this bill, though, on Friday, if possible. Representative Grunberg.
For the purposes of discussion, and thank you, for the purposes of discussion, do we still have a quorum?
Hold your motion. What's your discussion?
Oh, but there's not going to be a discussion.
Okay. Let me ask a question.
Sure. I would be prepared to make a motion for discussion only without indicating.
Representative Grunberg.
I was just going to say that the motion would be to adopt a discussion only, but that would not indicate how I felt on the merits of the bill.
Someone here from the Department of Administration, would you join us a minute? Could you state your name, please, for the record for us?
My name is Mike McMullen.
And you're with the Department of Administration?
Correct.
We have a fiscal note that has been added to our packet, and it's a zero fiscal note. Would you explain that?
Yes. The commission, as it's being rewritten, will move the request for assistance from Legislative Affairs to the Department of Administration. And our experience with salary commissions in the past have been that if they ask for help, the help will come from the Division of Personnel, but the amount of help requested is so minor and it's information that's readily available to us that we would not need additional funding to provide that assistance.
Now, we have a fiscal note also from Commissioner Special Officers, Public Officers, from the Office of the Governor, which does have a fiscal note. So this is a different department, I assume.
Right. The other fiscal note, I haven't seen it, but it's prepared by the Office of the Governor, Boards and Commissions, which is where the commission will reside. And I believe it covers the meeting notices, travel and per diem for the commission members. Mike Nysich from the Governor's Office is here. Mike, you can shed some more light.
Any questions from the committee?
Mr. Chairman, one question, Mr. Chairman. This is being transferred to the Department of Administration, Mike. The boards and commissions, is that normal that they would handle the travel per diem and things like that?
Well, the commission itself is being set up in the Office of the Governor, but there's a provision in their duties on page 3, line 25 of the committee substitute. If requested by the commission, the Department of Administration shall provide staff for the commission. So the commission is in the Office of the Governor, but the staff is where would come from, the administration. And as I say, our experience in providing this sort of assistance to the two prior commissions is that it's minimal that they ask for.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, one more question, sir.
Okay.
Well, Mike, you've got $36,000 down for 92 for this coming year that started for contractual services. Do you have any idea what that is?
I believe that's the other Mike.
Oh.
That's the Boards and Commissions.
Sorry. I apologize, Mr.
Has the governor's office or administration taken a position on this bill other than the fiscal note?
Yes, I hope the position paper had reached you. Should have been here about the same time the fiscal note had. I can run down that information. In terms of the general concept itself, I don't think you'll be surprised if this administration opposes the extension of authority of power from any other board. Commissioner Keller,
Is there in the, did you say there's an exact, an actual position paper, or just the analysis from the public office with their, or the boards and commissions fiscal number? I don't see a position paper from the government.
Well, we had prepared one, and it was signed, and we understood it was forwarded.
There's a governor's fiscal note.
Yeah. And a governor's narrative right after.
We do not have, as far as I can see, a position paper. So maybe you could explain the administration's position on board.
Okay.
There's a fiscal note.
Repeat, I guess, the general position on in terms of boards and commissions is this governor does not want any more boards and commissions, having any more authority than they already have. With regard to the salary commission, the advisory role that it currently has seems to be sufficient. Commissioner Keller particularly expressed the view that elected officials who have the power to set salaries ought to be able to set their own salaries. The mechanism of this bill gives you a veto, but if there's a lack of action by the legislature, recommendation to go into effect, and that seems to be the reverse mechanism that would be appropriate. We're not opposed to dealing with the judiciary salary, since they are not in a position to set salaries, and we would suggest that perhaps a mechanism like Section 2, Chapter 47, Session Laws of Alaska 1974, might be a mechanism to deal with their salaries and make their salaries essentially automatic based on cost of living, consumer price index changes. I've mentioned that to the companion bill in the Senate, and Mr. Christensen is aware of that that provision, and I don't know if there's any mileage from it. We also see a impact in collective bargaining. The laundry list in the bill is a very good laundry list. The potential impact is that if the commission recommends a change in a governor's salary because of these factors, and this state is in collective bargaining, including binding arbitration, how are we going to defend a position other than as much as the governor got in terms of percentage increases? And so we will have, that would just put an additional burden on the collective bargaining process by adopting that sort of a good laundry list in statute. And that would be our position.
Any questions from the committee?
Yes, the session law you talked about, Mr. Moore, is that in the current permanent statute?
No, it was a statute back in the potentially the pipeline construction days when collective bargaining agreements in recognition that cost of living was skyrocketing had an escalator clause that says salaries would increase specifically by the...
What is the citation on that?
Section 2, Chapter 47, Session Laws of Alaska 74.
We have that right here.
I don't think you'll find it in the current books. It's
No.
If you have old session laws, you can find it.
If, would you have any opinion on the heads of the departments? We have taken out the heads of the department out of this bill. Your bill, more specifically enacted by the legislature, right now it's tied to the schedule in 3927, and as that changes, the commissioners change, and that sense of relationship between the commissioner and the rest of the classified service, the parts exempt service, the removing that relationship sort of takes a cap off of salary, and then other arguments come into play about who else should get paid how much.
And did you also discuss the governor and lieutenant governor who can't set their salaries?
Again, they would like generally prefer that to be by a positive vote of the legislature rather than the default of a salary commission commission makes a recommendation to increase the governor within a governor's salary. If the legislature takes no action, the governor has no power to stop it.
I'd appreciate it if you get your comments to us in writing somewhere, find out where they
find out what happened
to
it. Well,
any other questions from the committee?
Mr. Chairman, just a statement. If I understand Mike correct, the governor apparently doesn't like this bill, with the exception of the judicial salary.
The governor does not like boards and commissions. And since this bill deals with giving an existing board and commission more authority, you know, reconstituted, renamed with more authority, he's opposed on that basis.
Mr. Chairman, I look forward to the written comments.
Representative Moyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As long as I'm just throwing comments out, I think it was Governor Cooper who tried to reduce his salary and found that statute did not permit him to do so. Although he could reduce commissioner's salaries for austerity measures, there was no mechanism allowing himself to reduce his own. And if some governor in the future should want to do that, why, I think he should be able to do so.
He could just give it back.
I think that's the end he did. He voluntarily did or joint charities or something, but legally had no way to do it.
Mr. Christensen, do you have any comment on the administration's position?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. That under this legislation, the legislature retains the sole authority to actually appropriate the money to pay these salaries, and the governor retains his line item veto authority over such an appropriation. The legislature would not have to fund this, so the legislature would have to make an affirmative vote to fully fund its salary and the governor's salary, and the governor would have the ability to veto part of that appropriation if he thought his salary were being increased too much, or legislators' salaries were being increased too much.
And it really is that kind of where you come in, where I believe the Constitution says that the salary will be set by law or statute. Is that one way that you interpret that by the appropriation process?
Mr. Chairman, the first you need an underlying statute which says what the salary is. Then you need a specific appropriation to get the money. Here, analysis is that it is constitutional for the legislature to delegate its authority to actually set the amount of the salary. However, the legislature probably cannot constitutionally delegate its authority to appropriate the money. And in fact, the case law, which has upheld seems very similar to this in the federal system and in the states which have it, has indicated that really must maintain the appropriation authority, and as long as it does so, it is okay to delegate the power to actually set the amount.
Thank you. Anything else in the committee? Thank you, sir.
Oh, I didn't know. I have a question for Mr. McCall. Do you happen to have a copy of that statute that was revealed?
I can get a copy real easy. We keep our own.
I would appreciate maybe the
if you could maybe print us a copy with that of that also.
Sure.
Good morning. Would you state your name and position, please, for the record?
My name is Mike Nysen. I'm the Admin Service Director for the Office of the Governor.
Mike, do you have anything further to add on this?
Not unless there's specific questions regarding the Office of Governor fiscal note.
The 01.
No, there's a fiscal note in here for
the board's first year. Mm-hmm.
$60,000.
Now, might I ask you something here? Who is everything now that is under the Office of the Governor going to come through the Office of the Governor? Is that all fiscal notes, all position papers? Or are they actually now going to be? I mean, who's making the decisions on these? Does boards and commission make their decision on their fiscal note, administration on theirs, and what? How's the administration going to be handling these questions, position papers and fiscal notes?
Position papers, to my understanding, is being coordinated through our legislative office up on the third floor.
For everything that's in the office of the governor,
for
whether it's...
the office of the governor, correct. All fiscal notes are prepared by my shop regarding any legislation that has fiscal impact that relates to the office of the governor, as is the department.
So did you prepare both of these fiscal notes?
No. Mike McMullen, I believe, over at his shop in the Department of Administration, prepared the zero fiscal note. We prepared the fiscal note as it related to expenditures associated with the commission, meeting, travel, etc. The legislation calls for this particular body to be located within the office of the governor. The only addition to that is, within the Department of Administration, any support for that body needs to come from the Department of Administration. But it doesn't relate to travel expenses, communication expenses, things of that nature that the body would need to have access to in order to do their function and to meet on a periodic basis. So those expenses would then come from the office of the governor where this body is supposedly located.
Questions of the committee? All right, thanks.
Thank you.
So wishes of the committee at this time? Representative Grunberg.
For discussion only, I move this yes.
Committee substitute is moved to be before us. Is there any objections? The committee substitute is before us. I'd like to hold this committee substitute until next Friday's meeting, at which time we'll take it up again. People have further input or be prepared to make further amendments at that time. I would appreciate it. Representative Gruber.
I do have some general questions here, and I just see a number of different issues. This is not a simple thing. It's an interesting concept. The problem, and I think that the problem as we see it is probably different than the problem as seen by the members of the judiciary, and possibly different still as seen by members of the executive. But at least as seen by members of the legislature, the problem is that basically the salaries, and I think that the public opinion is changing in this area, our salaries are seen by many as too low and make us too dependent on special interest groups. And I think we might as well be very frank and say that, because I think that's what people generally say. As a result, the legislature politically doesn't have the intestinal fortitude to raise its own salaries. They're afraid of the political repercussions. I don't see that as being a problem with the judiciary. I have never specifically seen a legislature afraid to raise any judges' salaries for political repercussions, particularly with respect to the lower trial courts, the district court judges. Courts of limited jurisdiction, Superior Court, the Trial Court of General Jurisdiction. But I have not seen that as a problem anywhere. I can see a governor being reluctant to put in the bill to raise his or her own salary, but I haven't seen that being a problem as being approved by the legislature. As a practical matter, what we have is a different problem with respect to those. It's not that the legislature is unwilling to act, is that I think that the judges may feel that the process is too cumbersome, that we have to pass a law every time we want to raise their salary, but not that it's usually a problem to get that through. But it is a problem to get through a law or anything raising a legislator's salary. And this is a way to transfer the responsibility, subject to a veto, basically by our passing a law we'd have to pass a law to undo what the commission has done. And this is kind of what Congress has done. And I think that the public would rather that the legislature, in that case Congress, had the intestinal fortitude to pass something straight out, rather than having to hide behind a commission and undoing that. There are different ways of dealing with the problem. I've given this some thought. I think one way of dealing with the problem is in the concept of the Madison Amendment that we dealt with last year for Congress. It says no Congress can raise its own salary, so it doesn't become effective until after the next election. And the way this bill deals with it is it has the report come in at the beginning of the biennial cycle and take effect 60 days afterwards. So that's right after the session convenes, when everybody's pretty mellow and laid back and nothing happens, it just sort of slides by. The opposite thing would be allowing them to come in at any time, but just not have it take effect until after the next election. And if it becomes a campaign issue, then you live or die by that. You just defend it on your campaign. That's an alternative way of dealing with it, which if we have it by a commission, and we have it so that it has to be disapproved, at least we're up front and we say, look, it doesn't apply to ourselves, and if you don't like what we did, deal with it in the campaign. And I don't think very many people would lose an election on that account if people are afraid of that. But the people of the state would at least have the opportunity to consider that when they cast their ballot for the senator or representative.
Any further comments from the committee? All right.
I do have one.
Representative Grunberg.
Also, this deals with a different kind of an animal that I've ever seen before. And the term that's used throughout is not that the commission issues regulations, but that it issues orders. And I have never seen, except like with the Public Utilities Commission or something like that, in an adjudicatory capacity. The term order generally refers to a court order or an order of a commission that adjudicates something. I guess it could refer to a rate-making kind of a thing, but that's generally an adjudication type of situation. Is an order the same as a regulation?
Chris, would you like to respond to Representative Gruber?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Legally speaking, I think to a great extent an order have much the same status. It would have the effect of law within its limits. This might really be a question of semantics. We chose the term order simply because that was what they called it in many other states. A different word could be chosen. Since it is not exactly like a regulation, since it is not adopted pursuant to the Administrative Procedures Act, some term other than regulation would probably be appropriate.
Representative Grunberg.
Number one, are there not, there's no particular requirement in the general law that all regulations must be adopted pursuant to the APA. That depends upon whether the authorizing statute references the APA. And I guess the only other thing I'm saying is if we adopt a new term of art, I'm reluctant to do that because we have certain kinds of categories, and when you create something new, we have regulations and laws, and now we're going to have orders. And that's going to be fodder for litigation. What is in order and why is it different than this, that, and the other thing?
Any other comments, Chris?
No, Mr. Chairman.
Any other comments from the committee? All right. House Bill 129 will be heard further on Friday of this week. Do I have anyone on teleconference to testify on House Bill 4? I have anyone in Tope?
Rich and Tope have gone offline.
They have gone offline already. have before us House Bill 4. We have met. So are we going off completely on teleconference then? We'll leave it on for right now. We met twice in a work session on House Bill 4. We met for several hours on Saturday. We have speedily progressing. I think we're on page 2.
We're on 3 to 4.
No, we are on page 13. And I wanted to discuss this section with the whole committee, to be honest. My intention is to spend a little bit of time here on this, as much as people can stay, and then set another work session as quickly as possible in the next couple of days. We'll talk about it at the end. We're on Article 3, page 13, campaign finance restrictions. And the one reason that I felt that was important to talk about this with the whole committee is that I think this is a completely different section. Well, first part, we've been talking about ethics, and now we're talking about campaign reform. First part, we talked about a commission dealing with things, and I believe here we're talking about the Alaska Public Offices Commission dealing with matters. So I think they're quite different. Representative Finkelstein, would you give us an overview on this section or your thoughts on it?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. These two pages are do include a lot of the policy of the bill. The most of the rest of the 46 pages relate to the Ethics Commission and ethics standards. These two pages are the only campaign financing restrictions in the bill. And it's basically five things this section does, these two pages 13, 14, and 15. It says that no fundraising is set in which periods it can occur, which is June 1st through the end of the year and the year prior to an election, and then June 1st through the election and the year of the election for a legislator. And the idea is to preclude fundraising by legislators during a legislative session. Right now, only fundraisers, literally fundraising events, are precluded in June. This would preclude fundraising, period, and would also preclude fundraising after the date of the election. The other change in this bill is limiting the pass forward of funds from one campaign to the next. And the that's on page 14 at line 29. The maximum amount you could pass forward from one campaign to the next would be $5,000 for the House and $7,500 for the Senate. John, correct me if I'm wrong, but this would go into effect January 1st of 93, I think.
Not the way it is now.
Oh, it isn't that way.
The way it is now, it goes into effect immediately.
Okay, that's sort of an issue with this whole bill is effective dates, and there's been a number of approaches. It partially depends on when you pass it, when it actually goes into law. One approach is to make it effective for this election cycle. Another approach is to make it effective for the next election cycle. And that's something that's hard to resolve at this point. The conclusion last year in the ethics bill was to apply them to the next election cycle, which in this case would be January 1st, 1993. Those
change is what you can do with surplus funds. Right now, you can do anything you want with surplus funds, basically. And under this, you would not be able to take the money as personal income. You'd be able to retire loans, hold a victory party, return them to contributors, or donate it to charity, or to the general fund. This is beyond the $5,000. You can move forward into your own personal campaign. The I think that's basically the effects of these two pages.
Representative Finkelstein, I have a couple questions. On page 14, line 8, what is the reasoning behind? Is it felt that it's unethical to give campaign funds to another candidate? Is that something that people don't think is right?
That's, Mr. Chairman, that's emerged over the last few years. I myself have received campaign funds from other people, so I've certainly been a participant in it. The problem just is that the contributor gave the contribution to a candidate and they didn't give it to another third-party candidate. So people are making contributions and they're going to someone they didn't intend. There's a huge controversy erupting in Arizona right now over what appears on the surface to be, in most cases, payments of bribes to legislators. There's 7 legislators under indictment. But what's becoming clear is that it's a process that they're using there, which is probably illegal in its enactment, but it was legal in its intent, which is legislators taking money and redistributing it to other candidates to gain favor. Most of the time it was to procure good locations for themselves in an organization. A Senate president candidate, for instance, would be in Arizona, take this money and then go around and distribute it in legal contribution sizes to various candidates to curry favor them for themselves. And in that case, the money was contributed for that purpose. Most cases, in the last case, not contributed for that purpose. The classic case was under the old system in California, where the largest portion of fundraising that occurred within, like, the California Assembly was contributions to Willie Brown. He received huge amounts of them, and then he went and distributed them to others based on how well they conducted themselves during the year and whether they gave him any problems.
He sort of made a list. He checked it twice.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll have to talk to Representative Ford about that.
Yeah. This isn't something that's been much of a problem in Alaska. There's never been any case that relates at all to those, but the idea is to eliminate that. And mostly on the idea that if you give money to someone, that's who you're giving to, not to another.
All right, let me ask you about the next session then also. You can't use your campaign funds to pay for fines. And it says assessed by a court or other body. Would this include the Alaska Public Offices Commission?
Yes.
And so right now, if you are late on a 7-day report, I believe it's a $50 fine a day or something, that would not be able to come out of your campaign account. Is that how you're interpreting this?
Yes, except that it says, unless the fine is assessed as a result of actions by a member of your campaign committee where the candidate did not know those actions.
So in other words, if your treasurer is late, you can still pay for it out of your campaign account.
Right, if it's not your fault. They're trying to differentiate between mistakes made by a campaign account, which should be paid by the campaign, versus candidate's action. There's plenty of cases that are purely the actions of a candidate, and they didn't want a candidate to be, they wanted a candidate to be personally liable for actions of the candidate, but not for, you know, actions of someone else in the campaign.
Sam Greenberg.
Are we still on teleconference?
Yes.
this gets into an issue that we have been dealing with. I think it's in House Bill 41, Representative Bruckman's bill, dealing with libelous statements and stuff that appear in campaign literature and stuff. We have that in the subcommittee now. And the issue there has arisen as well. What should be a candidate's liability for the vicarious acts of another? In that case, it is whether the candidate, and Mr. Gagin can correct me if I'm wrong the way I'm phrasing this, whether in that case a candidate should be liable for somebody else who has a material misstatement in one of his or her campaign pieces of campaign literature, or libel somebody. Here we have whether you should be liable, candidate should be liable, if another person violates some law or regulation, like filing something late. And what we're talking about in the other bill is if there's an amount of recklessness involved, because otherwise you would just simply, as a candidate, say, I didn't know what went into this, somebody else just did it. And the question really is whether you should have known and whether you were reckless in not controlling your staff better. At least that's my thought with respect to libel, if the person acted recklessly. That should be sufficient. And here, I had a situation where something wasn't filed late, but I thought it was going to be filed. It wasn't filed, and we took care of it on time. But I could see somebody just blatantly walking out and not taking any steps to instruct the staff, and then saying, well, this thing was filed late. I didn't know. I think there should be more of a standard than that. The question is whether the person was reckless in not making sure that the staff filed the thing on time.
Representative,
sure. The only difference here is, regardless, somebody pays. This isn't a case of libel where you're off the hook if you're not. The case here is that if you didn't know about it, it's still paid. The fine is still paid. It's just paid out of your campaign account. Nobody's off the hook. You just don't pay it personally. That's the only difference. Okay.
David, you might pull your mic a little towards you a little more or something. So we do have people in Anchorage that are listening from 8 o'clock. And, of course, a real important part of this section is that you feel that any money that's left over in your campaign shouldn't be there. In other words, if I had an easy campaign and I raised so much money and maybe I didn't have an opponent, so I didn't spend very much, that I should not be able to keep that money for the following election.
Mr. Chairman, I think it's arguable what level you should limit that pass forward at. I do believe there should be some allowed pass forward. This bill chooses $5,000 for the House, $7,500 for the Senate. There's nothing magic in those figures, and you could pick any other. But I do think there should be some limit.
Representative Choquette.
Mr. Chairman, I have a tendency to agree with Representative Finkelstein that there should be a limit. I would bring to the information of this committee that a number of legislators use this account now to supplement the lack of adequate funds for office expenses in Juneau, namely the $4,000 figure that we talked about earlier. I wonder if Line 29, Section 6, there we could make reference to allowable funding or allowable funds to be used specifically for office expenses while the legislator is in Juneau.
Representative Finkelstein.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Thank you. That's another possibility. If we chose to do that, I'd recommend putting a limit on that as well. The idea behind this approach here is a little different than that. The idea behind this approach is to set up the office account as a vouchered
system with an increased amount of money available to it. I think it's $7,000, $9,000, or $13,000, depending on the size of your district. And to not have personal office accounts, which is what we have now, which is your own personal funds. But what you're describing is also another possibility, but I think if you chose to go that route, you'd essentially have two different office accounts. And I think the most important thing is that you have a limit on how much could be put in that as well. Otherwise, it would become a vehicle for passing forward huge amounts of funds from one campaign to the next, which is what's trying to be stopped here.
Representative Grunberg.
Can I go back to the use of the campaign account to pay for a fine?
Yes, sir.
Okay. My recollection is that under federal law, you can establish a specific taxpayer number for your account, and then the tax, if you earn interest, becomes tax to the campaign rather than to you. I don't know if there are deductions, et cetera, but there's federal law that's involved here. And generally, federal law does not allow the deductibility of any type of fine. You can't deduct it from your income tax. It's not a deduction. By the same token, I think very few contributors would want any of their money used to pay for a fine. I can't imagine any contributor, unless it was a specific fundraiser to take care of a fine or something that people were specifically giving for that purpose. Sometimes they have for legal defense fees and stuff. I think that's been done here in the past. But just for general run-of-the-mill contributors who are general run-of-the-mill contributions into your account, I think most of them would be somewhat concerned to see that any of their money going to pay for your fine in an APOC matter or any other matter. And I, regardless of whether the candidate knew or didn't know of the actions, frankly, I have some difficulty in allowing any campaign money, unless it was specifically raised for that purpose or something. But the general rule, I think, should be that you can't use your campaign money to pay off a fine.
Well, certainly the way it is now, it can be.
Yeah.
Finkelstein.
This is a step ahead from what status quo. This accomplishes a lot of what Representative Bloomberg wants. You just have to remember that the scale of campaigns varies. Campaigns most of us are involved in are relatively small. There are sometimes very, very large Senate campaigns where the candidate doesn't know what's actually going on, you know, among factors. And certainly to point out an extreme, which isn't in this bill, look at governor's races. The pattern here is, of course, in governor's races, you can't possibly know, all the elements going on. So I do agree with your point, but this is the means to get to that, to try to make the candidate pay for any fines when they were involved.
Yeah, I understand that. I'm just sort of expressing a concern, and it's probably not as big a deal as I think.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Shilkow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's also a factor that has to be taken into account if the candidate is not in agreements with the commission on a fine. I currently have a very small piece. I think it's $30 on a late filing, and whether or not sliding a report under the door when the office is closed constitutes delivery. I disagree with Representative Grunberg. I think that if we're sincerely trying to comply, and we do make mistakes, it is a part of the campaign. It is something that would not have resulted had you not filed for office. Thank you.
By the way,
Representative Grunberg,
if that is a problem, and I take it that slid it under the door on the day, and there's a question about that. There's a specific case on that that I can talk to you about.
Representative Finkelstein, we have also this last section here really deals with raising money for legal costs. And it seems to be somewhat broad. In other words, if I'm charged with any kind of crime, I can go out and do fundraising for it.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, I'd be glad to explain that section. I hadn't gotten to that section. That's another part of the bill. But I'd be glad to explain that.
I'd like to, please.
The Section 350 is a legal defense fund, and the it's very short in this bill. It was very long in last year's bill. There are a couple amendments that are needed, one of which gets to the point that Representative Covina mentioned. But the idea behind this is that right now, if you're subject to some sort of action and you have a legal defense costs that arise from your activities as a legislator, you have no recourse to try to recoup those funds. As the law stands, if someone was to try to give you a contribution, a donation to help you pay for your legal defense funds, you'd be taking a bribe. And so so in order to alleviate that, we've wanted to allow for the establishment of legal defense funds as well as election challenge funds. If you were in a closely contested election and you tried to raise funds to pay for your attorney's fees and you were an incumbent legislator, that wouldn't be allowed either. You'd have to take them as campaign contributions, and which, you know, after running a long campaign, you know, most of your contributors may have already given you the maximum they can. So I think it's a good approach. There's two amendments I suggest. One of them is the one Representative Covina mentioned, restricting the subject area that you could apply these legal defense efforts to, so that had to be related to your job. The second one is an oversight. I think the commission should be able to establish a maximum amount on these contributions. We didn't put in $1,000 as the maximum amount for political contributions, but the commission may well choose to make a maximum of $1,000 or $5,000. We certainly wouldn't want this section to be abused by someone taking large amounts of money from sources. So.
Representative Groomberg.
I think that last point's excellent. You could have Joe Fatcat saying, basically, I'm going to give you a hell of a contribution here, or do this, that, or the other thing, and don't worry about it. If there's any legal costs involved, I'll pick up the tab, sort of a hold harmless. And what you're saying would go away short term with that.
I should have mentioned, since I'm mentioning amendments here, we do have these two amendments prepared for this one. In the previous section, there were a number of changes suggested by APOC. In the campaign financing provision, some of them were technical, some of them were substantive, and I'd be glad to explain those when we reach that point as well.
Ms. Borman, in Anchorage, do you have any comments on this section, especially since it, this whole section we've talked about so far today, since it all deals with the Alaska Public Offices Commission as a regulator?
Mr. Chairman, no, I don't have any comments over my testimony last week. I'm available to help or answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Ms. Borman. I would like to note that Representative Choquette has to leave. We will not have a quorum. No, that's all right. I mean, if you're going to go, you're going to go.
Yeah, I do have another meeting.
I have another meeting, too. I just realized.
What we probably need to do then is set up a time for another work session. I would like to do it as early quickly as possible. This week, tomorrow, afternoon.
I can't do it till 5 tomorrow.
That would be a good time.
You want to do it 5?
If staff could check, it sounds like a good time.
What, you want to do it at 5 o'clock? It won't be your birthday this time.
Am I on this subcommittee?
Yeah. No, it's subcommittee of the whole.
Oh, sure.
It's work session.
I'd have to check with my staff.
I think it's okay.
Okay, we'll
tentatively for 5 o'clock unless I call everybody up and change it, all right? All right. Now, the next meeting of House State Affairs will be Wednesday, February 27th at 8:30 in the morning. At that time, we'll take our first hearing on House Bill 11 relating to the longevity bonus with nursing home residents. First hearing on House Bill 20 relating to longevity bonus nursing home residents. First hearing on House Bill 67 relating to the impoundment of mistreated animals. We also have possibly other bills that we have heard before, but I don't think so. And we'll hear these bills. This bill also then again on Friday will also stay on the schedule. We're adjourned at 10:15.